Good afternoon, everyone. It is 12:41 p.m. It's the June 17th, 2011, walking to rules. We're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 412B.
Chairs and members of the committee, Senate Bill 412B provides authorized tribal police officers with certain powers and protections that are provided to Oregon law enforcement officers. It creates a transitional approach to a grant of state law enforcement authority to tribal police officers, provides for specific authority for the first 2 years limited to three situations outside Indian country: hot pursuit, commission of a crime in an officer's presence, and upon request or approval of law enforcement agency with jurisdiction. And unrestricted authority within Indian country. It sunsets these provisions July 1, 2013, and after that provides tribal officers with state law enforcement authority equivalent to other law enforcement agencies for the following 6 years, sunsetting those provisions July 1, 2019, and reverting to current law as it exists today. It defines Indian country and adds a further condition to the receipt of authorization to enforce state law that requires tribal governments to adopt written policies to facilitate conformity with the state's discovery obligations in criminal cases, permits tribal governments to make written requests to obtain copies of neighboring sheriff's policies, and if so, requires sheriffs to respond within 30 days, requires tribal governments to adopt policies within 90 days of passage of the measure if no written request is made of the neighboring sheriffs, provides an exception to this requirement if no neighboring sheriff has adopted a written discovery policy. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Okay. Thanks, Cheyenne. Speaker Roblin and Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson, Co-Chair Hunt, and the rest of the Rules Committee. It's a pleasure to be here today, especially with a fellow member of... Oh, and I am Arnie Roblin, State Representative from District 9, for the record. With a fellow member of the Legislative Commission on Indian Services, Senator Farrelly and I have been in that position for the last year or so, he much longer than I. It is a very important commission and, from my perspective, an exceptional organization that was set up in our state, and then I don't know that it's in any other state. And it allows us to have really state-state conversations with the nine recognized tribes, and it has been a great experience for me to have conversations, and one of the consistent conversations is about this bill that we have here in front of you today. In my community, I have one tribe who's is basically my whole district. They have part of Coos County, part of Douglas County, part of Lane County. And what I see 412 doing is making it possible for us in rural areas to have better, more secure roads, better, more secure places, because we will include law enforcement agencies working together from the tribes and those local communities. Currently, there are arrangements with each of the different county sheriffs to do things. So as that person drives from one part of their assets and their reservation to the other side of it, they have to remember exactly where they are and how they can react in those situations. This makes that more uniform. It also has a sunset, so we'll know how it's working. It is, in my opinion, one of the more important bills that we'll be hearing this session, because it continues that engagement between our state and our nine recognized tribes in helping make our citizens more secure. They have agreed on the training and all the other aspects so that they really are the same. They have the same training that our other officers have, and I believe this bill clarifies that relationship between the state and the tribes in a much better way than we are currently doing it. So I urge your eye support.
Thank you. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ted Farrelly, and I have the honor of being the senior member of the Senate and also the honor of representing District 30, which is 34,000 square miles, beginning in Marion and Clackamas County and proceeding all the way over to the Idaho-Nevada border, which will soon include 1,600 square miles more and now border on the California border, soon to be touching the Pacific Ocean if things continue. In that Senate District 30, that that district entirely encompasses the Warm Springs and Paiute Indian reservations, which virtually that district 30 is virtually all ceded lands on which treaty tribes retain hunting, fishing, and traditional gathering rights. I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 412. And let me tell you, I will be very brief. I don't need to make a floor speech on this bill. Just let me touch on four things as briefly as I may. I think it's a good day to recognize that tribes are willing to waive their sovereign immunity for any liability that they may have in connection with their law enforcement activities. This, let me tell you, is a monumental issue for tribes. It's one that they have undertaken with a great deal of thought and thoughtfulness, and it is represents a huge embrace of what it means to be a fully certified law enforcement force in the state of Oregon. They also have, in Senate Bill 412, agreed to providing full indemnification for any liability equal to any other law enforcement agency within the state of Oregon. It's also a good day to recognize that in response to issues raised by law enforcement professionals in Oregon, it's a good day to understand that they are willing to adopt records-keeping procedures that are not only consistent with, but developed in concert with their neighboring jurisdictions. And if you look carefully at the bill, what you'll learn is that the neighboring jurisdictions actually get to help consult with the tribes and create that documentation procedure so that it is consistent with that neighboring jurisdiction and fully serviceable for all purposes, including public records, disclosure, FOIA, and all of the other requirements that we put on any law enforcement agency within the state of Oregon. And finally, it's a good day to recognize that as a result of Senate Bill 412, we will have full certification by the Bureau of Police Standards and Training of all those participating Native American law enforcement officers. Those represent a quantum leap forward in the professionalization of Native American police forces. And finally, let me point out that it's a good day for us to recognize that these fully certified, fully trained, fully indemnified law enforcement professionals would be provided not at the public expense of the Oregon taxpayer, but at the expense of the tribes. So, colleagues, I hope that you realize that it's a good day to move forward on the full professionalization of Native American police forces. There's plenty of opinions about this, but I think over time this will be looked at as a pivotal day, a historic day in the history of Oregon's relationships with Native American tribes, and a great day for us to realize that Native American peoples wish to help carry some of the burden of providing law enforcement for our communities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman, and I will be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Committee members, any questions? Well, Mr. Speaker, Ms. Sutter, thank you very kindly.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill, and I urge you to go to work session and move forward on this good bill.
That would be an outstanding thing to do.
Okay. So you won't be bringing candy by me anymore then? Okay, I get it. Thank you. This is, okay, next folks I'd like to have called up is Councilmember Ray. And Tim Adelman and Brad Niebuhr.
I'll go ahead and start. Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Tim Adelman. I'm currently the chief of police for the Umatilla Indian Reservation. I have 33 years' experience in law enforcement, including I'm a retired member of the Washington County Sheriff's Office. During my time with Washington County, I can tell you, I was very fortunate. I got to work a lot of different assignments throughout my career, and I worked my way up to the rank of commander before retiring. Since then, taking over as a position with the chief for the Umatillas, I can tell you, looking at my experiences from the past, that everything I've seen at Umatilla, we comply with everything that any other police organization in the state does. As a matter of fact, all of our officers have been and always have been current on their maintenance training and all of it. But what I want to talk to you about, why this is not only important to the tribes, this bill, but it's important to all Oregonians. This is a public safety matter for all Oregonians, not just the tribes. And on my reservation, currently under state law, our population is roughly right around 5,000 inhabitants there of the reservation, of which half are non-Indian. We also have a very, it's getting larger, casino and hotel, golf complex, recreational complex there, that the majority of the people who visit the reservation are non-Indian. Now, under the current state law, we have no jurisdiction over non-Indians. So, with that being, just to give you an example, we routinely respond to domestic disturbances like anyone else. Under state law, we have no authority if we go to a property or a residence that's owned and inhabited by a non-Indian to take any kind of enforcement action. The best we could do is go there and try and stabilize the situation, ask for a county deputy to respond or a state police officer, which is problematic. When it comes to traffic issues, say if, under current state law, if someone speeds through our reservation at 100 plus miles an hour, as you know, that's a traffic crime. Because we are tribal police officers, if they chose not to and they knew we were, they don't have to stop for us. They can leave the reservation. Say if a state police officer stops them then and they pull over, they've complied with what they need to do. But they haven't complied with us because we do not have authority over them. The best we could hope is that they would stop and we could then call for a deputy or a state police officer to come assist us. So those are some of the issues. When you talk about the casino or the hotel or the golf course there, it's the same thing. The vast majority are non-Indian peoples who come to enjoy what we offer there at the reservation. We have no authority to protect these people or to deal with them if we need to in a criminal or infraction type manner. But it's problematic what I said calling a deputy or the state police, because our state police office is very shorthanded there. I can tell you personal conversations I've had with Sheriff Trumbo. He's personally told me, he tells his deputies to stay off the reservation because, number one, he feels satisfied that we can handle what we need to. But he also just does not have the resources. If you read their hot sheets, which I get on a regular basis, continuous calls say deputy advised. As what that means is a deputy will respond when they're available if they can. And so with this bill, this greatly enhances public safety. There are more officers out there. It gives us authority to deal with things that we need to do within Indian country. It also would help us because we've had investigations that have dealt with non-Indians. We had a death investigation that we had to follow up on. It was an accidental death, so to speak. It was determined to be a hypothermic type situation where the kid passed out and died due to exposure, but we had to leave the reservation. We did the things that any good police agency would do. We contacted Clackamas County Sheriff's Office and asked for assistance going out and contacting these people. But on top of that, we had to do that too because we had no authority to go out and contact these people because we don't carry authority outside of Umatilla County with an MOU that we have, but even under the state law, we would have no authority. So we don't even have authority right now to carry out our own business if things occur on the within our Indian country. So I tried to be as brief as I can. Those are just some of the issues to give you a highlight as to some of the things that we face and some of the problems we have to deal with. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll go next. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Olson, Co-Chair Hunt, and members of the committee.
My name is Brad Nieper. I've been in law enforcement for a little over 24 years. 17 years of that was with the Oregon State Police. During that time with Oregon State Police, I worked patrol. I worked on the narcotic task force a couple of times in Clatsop County, and on the major crime team. And I am resigned from the Oregon State Police to take this jet with the tribes to develop a police department, which the tribe did not have when I went there. When I left Oregon State Police, I was a patrol sergeant. I've been with the tribe for about 7 years, and since that time, we've developed agreements with the City of Florence, the Coos County Sheriff, and the Lane County Sheriff. We now have, obviously, new sheriffs in both those counties, and we're still working on the agreement with the Lane County Sheriff. Some of the issues we have, similar to Chief Adelman, we travel daily between two different areas, Florence area and Coos Bay area. We have tribal lands in both areas. We are not deputized in Douglas County, and right now we're not deputized in Lane County. We constantly, as you can imagine, in our travels, which are daily, at least one of us travel daily to Coos Bay and back, run across things along the highway, accidents, traffic crimes, domestic violence on the highways, a number of things. And at this point, we can't take action. Almost a year ago, I guess, we had a notification that there was a wanted subject possibly in our area, wanted for rape and kidnapping out of Washington. As I was headed to Coos Bay, I spotted an individual who resembled the picture and the description of that subject. I turned around, went back, and I was pretty sure it was him. Contacted the Florence Police Department, was outside the city limits, just south of the city limits of Florence. When I contacted them, of course, the drawbridge came up, and I was on the south side with, I hadn't made contact with the suspect, but I was watching him and waiting for the bridge to come down so that I could get assistance from the Florence Police Department. It worked out. He didn't get away. We captured him. As a result of that, he went back to Washington. I received letters and phone calls from his latest victim and from a previous victim from 1979 thanking me for spotting this individual and the capture. None of those people cared if I was a tribal police officer or a city police officer or who I was. They cared that the job got done and that a dangerous person was taken off the street. That's basically, I could go on and on with examples like that. Recently, I assisted an Oregon State Police trooper on the highway, had two individuals stopped in two separate cars. She requested help. There was nobody within 15 miles. I was 2 miles away. I stopped. The individual, she arrested both of them, one for DUII. The other one wasn't wanted. He was on felony parole, had two stolen guns in his car. And anyway, that's what we want to be able to do. We want to be able to do our job and assist other agencies with that as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Chief.
Good afternoon. My name is Raymond Sumpty, a.k.a. Raymond Kalika, graduate of BPST, Class 20, lived back in 69. I worked for the tribal police since 68 to 89, went from the ranks from patrolman to chief of police the last 5 years, 83 to 89. The relationship that Warren Springs Tribal Police had with neighboring counties and state police was kind of simple, I think, at that time. There's talk of, you know, can't grasp tribal members, much less non-Indians, within the boundaries of our reservation. Tribal council some time back, before I joined the force in 68, allowed outside agencies to send a true copy of a warrant to the chief judge, signed off, and tribal officers served that warrant, knowing that we could not hold a non-Indian in our facility. We transported these individuals either to Wasco County or Jefferson County. If an interest is by another county, such as Clackamas or Multnomah County, it was up to those counties to work with Wasco or Jefferson County to transport back to wherever the interest was. There are a number of incidents where tribal police were called upon to assist outside agencies, in particular Jefferson County, a little bit in Wasco County, in dealing with, at that time, motorcycle gangs. We offered that. I know that at that time we responded, but we couldn't find a state or county, so we took on the disturbance call ourselves. In going back a little bit, the standards that we established in tribal police is that not only we were deputized by the counties, but we understood that we enforced state law. And to a higher level, we also became EMTs. So, I mean, it's just common sense that we're the first people there in an accident, that we apply the medical attention and then enforcement thereafter. It was kind of a little complicated, that sometimes, especially when a crime is committed, either you're EMT or you're an officer. But we worked through that with the DA's or the U.S. Attorney's Office. When I was the chief of police, it was I let these new hires, whether they're Indian or non-Indian, that they need to enforce three levels of law: tribal law, state law, and federal law. Now we get our own training on tribal law. We go to BPST on state law, but there's nothing really formal for federal law. So, depending on the case by case and the players involved, we try to sort out as to what jurisdiction that individual would go to, in particular non-Indians, as whether it's a state or federal court. So a little complicated. It's even complicated today. I think that there's a confusion today, is that there's a misunderstanding of federal law as to why, you know, some jurisdictions don't have jurisdictions within the boundaries of our reservation. We are a non-Tuolumne tribe. That determination was made back in the 1950s when the United States determined that some states need to take over jurisdiction of Indian country. My tribe sent a delegation back to D.C. and explained to them that we had our own force and court, so therefore we were exempted from Public Law 280. I know it's been very difficult for State of Oregon, OSP, and other jurisdictions as to why they had no jurisdiction. You know, they try to impress upon us that we ought to change it, but it's beyond us to change it. You know, that's the United States law. You can go back to D.C. and change it if you want. But I can't add any more, other than, you know, if I were to go through from 68 to 89, I'd be here till next week trying to justify why we ought to be recognized as police officers. You know, that then came and gone. If when I joined and went to the academy, my tribe had to pay for my attendance in the academy. It wasn't only till 1974 that there was a realization that any citations or arrests that we made, that the proceeds went to the respective counties, whether it was divvied up between the state, county, and city. Tribe got nothing out of that. So Warm Springs was identified as a police agency for the purposes of obtaining PTSD training at no more cost to the tribe. At the same time, the tribal police were to be identified in ORS as a police officer. But there were some objections to that, so therefore it never went through. You know, there's a sunset in this bill here. You know, I'm not going to argue against that. I mean, pretty patient that we are. When I completed academy in 1969, normally it takes 6-9 months to go through the field training manual, be submitted, and you get your certification. It took BPST 9 years to give me my certification. So I'm pretty patient. The rest of us are pretty patient. Other officers, non-Indian officers who attend, who were employed by us, they went to the academy, came back. The only time that they can receive their certification is when they left Warm Springs, tribal police, or work for a different agency. That's the only way they can get their certification. I don't blame them for moving on. But they did stay with us for a while, so we can get our money's worth out of them on the training and the absence. So in short, I got, you know, I think I better end it here. I might be stepping on some toes here. But I just want to further add is that I'm having a difficulty understanding and enjoying the police force and went to the academy. Two things stuck in my mind. Is that the law enforcement is a profession. Secondly, that I joined the Brotherhood of Law Enforcement. And more importantly, I said, I raised my paw and signed this Criminal Justice Code of Ethics. And it says some language in here. And today I don't feel that it means anything to some people, but it means a lot to me and other officers that work for me. And this book right here pretty much explains the difference of a 280 tribe and a non-280 tribe. A little bit of this was presented to all of his officers at the academy. Because there's confusion today, I'm kind of wondering if they still do that. I kind of doubt that, because we're having little problems within the Brotherhood. Thank you.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if, for the record, we could get the name and author of the book. So we just make that part of the record. A reference to it, at least.
Wait, could you provide that, who the author is?
Do you want to look at it? It's only the second edition. There's supposed to be a third edition coming out, and I can't find that book.
Questions? Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned, Chief, something about being deputized in Coos County, I think, but not in Douglas or Lane.
Yes.
I assume that you're referring to the deputizing by the sheriff.
Correct.
Of the county. I'm not sure how much of you might want to say here, but are you able to give us an idea what the issue is in Douglas and Lane County?
Douglas County, we have no lands in Douglas County.
Okay.
So we just basically pass through. Lane County, there's really no issue. I've been told by the sheriff that he's going to do it. He's got other things right now, apparently, budgets and other things.
Follow-up, if I may?
Follow-up.
Thank you. So you gave us an example of the fugitive from Washington south of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
If you were had been deputized as a deputy sheriff in Lane County, you could have handled that matter yourself directly. Is that right?
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Doherty, we're going to run till about 20 till 2 with this bill. Right. So if you'd like to come back at that time, we'll...
Thank you very
much. Thank you. If I could have Sheriff Bob Wolf, John Powell, Brian DeLashmet, and actually Paul Snyder, all four of you could come up together.
Co-Chair Olson, Co-Chair Hunt, my name is Bob Wolf. I'm the Sheriff of Polk County, and I'm here representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, also other members of the committee. There's been obviously a lot of discussion with Senate Bill 1 or 412. A couple of issues that I'd just like to touch on briefly with you, because I know time is tight. The concerns that have been coming from the Sheriff's Association is that in 412 there is no reference to compliance with Senate Bill 111, which is the use of deadly force bill, that all public law enforcement agencies in the state of Oregon are required to comply with. Also, in the reference to public records, there's been discussion about the tribe's willingness in 412 addressing criminal discovery, but there's really nothing that's addressing civil discovery issues when there is a wrongful action that's brought outside of a criminal arrest. As part of that process, if an individual's rights have been violated and a federal lawsuit is filed, and then we need to start getting records. Maybe, for example, my office, Polk County, has been involved with an issue with a tribal agency, and we're all going to federal court being sued for wrongful action. I'm compelled by Oregon law to provide my records that I have because I am a public agency. Tribes are a sovereign nation, and there's nothing in the bill that directly compels them to have to comply with civil records concerning personnel matters, performance reviews, in-house training, and other things like that. And in regards to the tort limits, while the bill does represent the fact that the tribes are required to put up a tort limit liability bond, unlike the public agencies in the state of Oregon, if we end up in federal court and the courts award an amount exceeding that federal limit, the tribes are not compelled to have to pay above that limit. It would be up to the council and to the tribe to determine whether or not they would want to waive their sovereign immunity and end up paying the difference. The taxpayers and or myself as sheriff, I end up having to pay that if the county decides not to, but the tribes would be exempt or could choose to be exempt if they chose to do so. Another reference I'd like to make briefly, because there's plenty of us here, but you heard testimony from Chief Adelman in regards to the fact that on their reservation they have no authority over non-tribal members. And that really is an issue for them. I understand that. I respect that. The reverse of that is true, though, as well, because if Umatilla County deputy sheriffs go on to the Umatilla Indian Reservation and they encounter a tribal member, they have no authority over them. So the issue is reciprocity. And if the tribes are wanting to be the same as all Oregon peace officers, state, county, and municipal, then they need to be the same in every category. And the issues that I've just addressed with you, if they want to be the same as police officers in the state of Oregon, they need to be the same across the board, as well as we can go on their land, they can come on ours. I could tie the committee up for a long time talking about PL 280 and the difference. You've heard some of that testimony. The issue really seems, outside of the three that I've addressed, the issue really seems to be focusing around, I understand Warm Springs and Umatilla do not have authority over non-tribal members. That is an issue. I agree. That issue isn't really being addressed because they don't want to give us the authority to come on their land either. And so, you know, I think we need to sit down and try to come to some sort of an agreement between the tribes and the state of Oregon is, you know, you can have authority of state authority on your land, but you still need to have authority to leave by the local sheriff to come off of the reservation if we need assistance. Sheriffs can deputize. There have been issues in which some sheriffs will not, and they'll pick and choose maybe because they don't like a particular tribal officer. You know, the issue is public safety. We've heard testimony before on the Senate side, and we've heard some testimony here this afternoon. It is about public safety. But if that public safety is going to be equal, it needs to be equal on both sides. So with that, I'll, unless the committee has any questions.
Okay, we'll move on. Thank you, Sheriff.
For the record, Brian DeLeishman, I'm here representing the Oregon State Police Officers Association, the Troopers, and the Oregon Council of Police Associations. They both asked me to come and express our concern about one particular element. Let me, before I get into that element, talk about the process that got us to this point. We are supportive of a number of the elements of this bill, including the additional training, DPSST training, the fact that these peace officers, tribal peace officers, if in fact assaulted, would be considered the same as other peace officers, whether they're on or off the reservation. There's a lot of good things in this bill. But the one thing that brings me here on behalf of my clients is the reciprocity issue that you just talked about. I've been told by a number of my both troopers and county deputies that they have some issues in some jurisdictions around the state in which they're not allowed on tribal land even to serve a warrant. And basically the response is, sorry, you can't come on tribal land to serve this arrest warrant. You have to catch him when he's off the reservation. And so that relates directly to the issue that Sheriff Wolf is talking about, which is this bill would give basically grant authority off the reservation to tribal police to do all the other functions that any other police officer could do. But in the same case, we're not flipping the coin in which you're allowing or requiring a memorandum of agreement between the local law enforcement, the state of Oregon, and the tribal authority, that the same authority would be granted to state and local officers. And with that, I'll stop. Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. I won't repeat some of the issues that have already been raised. I'd like to just refer to the letter that I submitted to the committee in which I raised one example of the difficulty of trying to bring everybody into the same situation in terms of what the law would apply in particular cases. And the example that I gave was a reference to what would happen in the event a tribal police officer was engaged in court-tortious conduct outside Indian country. And it relates back to a Supreme Court case, the case of Clark versus Oregon Health and Sciences University, in which the defendants were sued for well in excess of the tort liability limits at the time and place. And the Supreme Court said that the $200,000 tort limit is an exacerbated remedy when you're looking at $17 million in damages, and said for that reason, applying the tort liability limits to the individual, I'm not talking about the government, to the individual who was the agent of the government is an exacerbated remedy, and so it's therefore unconstitutional. And that's the issue that I raised in my letter to you. I think the same issue would apply possibly to federal 1983 cases. 1983 cases are federal civil rights cases. And as a matter of fact, they're the kinds of cases that usually apply in cases of police officers. If a jurisdiction is going to be sued for any kind of tortious or violation conduct, it's usually in cases of federal 1983 cases. And the cases that I've looked at, I'd like at this point to thank the proponents of this legislation for the high level of cooperation that they've given me in providing me with information and their points of view. But what it looks like to me is that in order for sovereign immunity to be waived, it has to be waived expressly. And the reference to waiving sovereign immunity in Senate Bill 412 is on the second page of the bill, and it says, in a manner similar to, and then it cites the Oregon Tort Claims Act, and it talks about tort liability. So the question arises for me is, how does this play out in terms of the responsibility that public bodies have to defend and indemnify their employees? Is that intended to be covered by the general reference to waiver, or is it not? And is that an express waiver, or is it not? And then the same issue would apply in federal 1983 cases. Those are not necessarily torts. They could be, but they could go beyond that, too. It could be discrimination against the protected class or something like that. And so my purpose in saying that was just simply to say I think this bill goes a long way in addressing the concerns that were raised by the various folks who had issues with regard to the bill. But when you try and become that global, that fast, it could wind up in a situation where problems arise that you didn't anticipate, and these could be two of them.
Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, my name is John Powell. I represent the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Co-Chairs and committee members, our concerns over Senate Bill 412 have not changed from day one. And rather than repeat what has been said, we have a series of five questions that we think, if you would submit to Legislative Council, would clarify many of the points that we've discussed as this bill has been on its journey. Contrary to at least some insinuations, there is not a public records a provision in this bill. And if I'm mistaken, I hope somebody can point that out. But that is one of the questions that we have indeed presented for your consideration, along with some of the other areas. This session, again, you passed legislation requiring agencies to preserve DNA and other evidence in case at a later date somebody could be found to be innocent through that provision. I don't see any like provision in Senate Bill 412. The same with several other areas. So we'll keep it brief for your time today, and we'll submit these questions to the committee and hope that before you would further consider this legislation, that you could get from your own legal staff answers to these questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Question?
Chair Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify, I don't think I heard any of you say that you've got any concerns about the benchmark level of certification and training that is required in this bill in terms of tribal police officers. Are there any concerns with the requirement around the certification and training side that would be required in order to be granted this authority?
Representative Hunt, members of the committee, that's a good part of the bill. The fact that they are required to attend DPSST and meet the full certification process, basic certification, intermediate, advanced, management, those are good things. There are good things in the bill. There's just some other issues about equality that have been our concern.
Follow-up. My understanding, I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding is that there was a recent court decision that was made, which leaves us in a different place, frankly, than we even were at the beginning of the session. Whereas, if I understand it, the court decision actually grants the ability of tribal police officers today
who have not been through the DPSSD certification ongoing training and met those same requirements to have some off-reservation authority today under that court decision that goes beyond anything that they would have in this. And in fact, this would only give it to folks who had actually been through that kind of certification process. Am I understanding that court decision correctly?
Representative Hunt, members of the committee, that's the Kurtz decision. And today you can have a peace officer in the state of Oregon. I can have a deputy just newly hired, and they don't have to go to the academy. They have to be certified within 18 months. So tribal police can hire a police officer, and they could not be certified up to 18 months, according to the bill. So they could still... they're still recognized as a tribal officer. And so under Kurtz, the decision of Kurtz, they would have the authority if they engaged in an offense or witnessed an offense on the reservation and the suspect goes to leave the reservation and he follows that person off the reservation. Under Kurtz, they possess authority to stop and detain, and they are protected under Oregon law if the officer is assaulted or anything that directly comes out of that stop towards the officer, additional charges can be placed. Under the Kurtz decision, the situation was chased him off the reservation, got him stopped, the officer got assaulted. He couldn't, the state of Oregon would not allow the officer or the suspect to be charged with assaulting that officer. It doesn't matter what color uniform, what shape the badge is, when they're representing law enforcement, they should be protected whether they're on or off the reservation. Conversely, under 412, if Wasco County deputy chases somebody onto the reservation and that person turns out to be a non or a tribal member, we've got no authority. That's a problem with the bill.
Last follow-up, just to clarify on that last point, that's under federal law. That prohibition is under federal law, not state law, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Representative Holley.
Thank you. There was just one little piece of this that was not quite making sense to me about the reciprocity issue. So I understand there, you know, the issue about you going onto tribal land or a police officer going onto tribal land and not having authority. But at the same time, it seems really troubling to me that the tribal police doesn't have authority over non-tribal members on tribal lands. Is that... I guess reciprocal part of that would be that you, I mean, do we or do other police agencies have authority over tribal members when they're off reservation if they break the law?
Co-chairs and members of the committee, Representative Holdley, I'm sorry.
Close enough.
Yes, if... I'm sorry, could you restate it? Because I had the answer, but...
So you as a county sheriff, do you have authority over a tribal member when they're off reservation?
Yes.
But conversely, tribal police don't have authority over non-tribal members when they're on tribal lands. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. I just got to say.
Right. Again, the issue between PL 280 land and Warm Springs, Umatilla, and a portion of Burns Paiute that's in Oregon, because they retroceded or pulled out of the public law 280 when it was passed in the 50s and signed by Eisenhower, it's just two separate laws. And so... in Polk County, for example, I have the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. We have, all police officers in the state of Oregon have authority on their reservation land to enforce state law on both tribal and non-tribal. We do not possess authority to enforce tribal law on tribal members unless so granted by the tribe.
Thank you. This still doesn't make sense, though. Yeah. Just saying.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And the last panel, Howie, can you come up? Pete, can you come up? And then Marilyn, might as well bring you into this mix too. And Stuart Roberts, Okay, yeah, if you want to do it right.
On the call.
Please. We're going to get the
thank you.
Officer Roberts on the phone here real quick.
Mr. Chair, since Chief Roberts is joining us by phone, it may be complicated. Perhaps we'd be happy to defer to his testimony first.
Really?
How
like things have changed, haven't they? Sir, Mr. Shepard,
Mr. Roberts.
Mr. Roberts, good afternoon. This is yes. Cheyenne Ross. I'm calling from a hearing room. You're on the record on the phone. Can you hear me all right?
I can. Thank you.
Thank you for waiting for the call. We're discussing Senate Bill 412, and there's a panel of other witnesses in the room who are waiting to speak as well, so we'll follow the chair's discretion.
Okay. Hey, Stuart, this is Representative Andy Olson from Albany. I'm one of the co-chairs here on this committee. Appreciate you jumping in board. You have with us two that will be listening to you besides the room. Marilyn Lorraine from DPSST is here on the at the table right now, getting ready to testify. Howie Arnett, and then also Pete Shepard. And they are recommending that you go first.
Okay. So go ahead?
Yeah, if you'd identify yourself and then...
Sure. Okay, Co-Chairs Olson and Hunt, members of the committee. My name is Stuart Roberts. I'm the Chief of Police for the City of Pendleton. I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony concerning Senate Bill 412. I've been following this debate for the last several years as tribal law enforcement entities have attempted multiple times to statutorily memorialize their authority. More specifically, I think I've been involved in a number of discussions surrounding this issue throughout this current legislative session, primarily my capacities as president of the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police and current past president. The OACP's position is, and I think even today, was to maintain some level of neutrality, mostly because we believe that the sheriffs could and should be able to work out their respective differences with the tribes. But since the tribes and the sheriffs has not come to consensus on a number of issues, I feel quite strongly that I needed to provide my perspective, which is not only rural, but it's also municipal. You know, I share an invisible line with the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla Indian Reservation. The line serves purposes. One, it's my East City limits, and it's also the western boundary of the CTUIR. This means that my agency serves many of the same Oregonians as the Umatilla Tribal Police Department. Consequently, we have to work together sharing resources and information in the name of providing the best service possible to the populations we serve. I also represent a rural voice, meaning the population density in my county is not what it is in other parts of the state, but that does not mean that the citizens expect or deserve anything less than those residing in urban or metro areas. In Umatilla County, we have consistently worked together through MOUs, mutual aid agreements, multi-jurisdictional teams, and the like, to meet or exceed expectations. Our ability to enter into such agreements is contingent upon concessions made by all parties because of sovereignty and authority issues, which we've managed to overcome without undue liability or abuse. As long as I've been employed with the Pendleton Police Department, the Umatilla County Sheriff has voluntarily deputized tribal officers without regard to reciprocity. Now the deputization discretionary authority may be lost or more clearly defined. The reciprocity issue has been raised, and I think in a lot of respects it's valid. I believe that the point of reciprocity may be moot based on federal law, but outside of legalese, I find it hard to believe that any agency other than tribal agencies truly have a desire or the resources to enforce tribal code on tribal members within the boundaries of the reservation, which is part of a similar debate that occurred in Washington State in 2008 before they passed a law expanding tribal officer authority. The sheriffs have raised a number of valid concerns related to laws that compel law enforcement agencies to comply, but I struggle to understand how the practice of deputization differs from certification when considering the liability of compliance. What the Senate Bill 412 issue comes down to for me is what's the responsible thing to do for all Oregonians. In my mind, is to recognize tribal officers and agencies who comply with standards of certification established by and regulated by DPSST. Why? Well, it's not a matter of if, but when, in my mind, when a critical incident occurs in my community, I want to have the ability to call upon all available resources. Due to my geographical isolation, that becomes a little daunting at times. The Umatilla Tribal Police Department, which is just outside my East City limits, has 15 sworn officers that they employ. Before I can make any decision concerning the deployment of those officers, I have to consider what I'm getting. And what that means to me is I have to know that the agency and the officers I'm calling upon are appropriately trained, statutorily recognized, and possess the knowledge and skill sets needed to be considered a resource up front. Because at the end of the day, we are responsible for the preservation of life. And I think that as law enforcement leaders, we need to keep that in perspective as we work through these issues and continue discussions about the appropriateness of certifying tribal officers. We recognize a lot of law enforcement entities within the state of Oregon, and it seems to me that it's only reasonable and commonsensical to also bring the tribal police entities and law enforcement officers into the fold. It's about service, and that's paramount in my mind as we move forward and give further consideration to the Senate bill. I thank you for the time.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I know your time is short, so I will abbreviate my remarks. I'll start where Representative Hunt and Sheriff Wolf left off, and that's the discussion of the State versus Kurtz.
Mm-hmm.
In State versus Kurtz, the Oregon Supreme Court concluded that at least for purposes of the enforcement of two specific statutes, the attempting to elude statute and the resisting arrest statute,
mm-hmm.
the current Oregon law includes tribal police officers. Now, what Kurtz that means is that under Kurtz, for those specific circumstances, tribal police officers have the authority, but no requirement for the kind of tort liability coverage or for the attendance at DPSST that is required of other individuals. Now, Sheriff Wolf and Representative Hunt had a good discussion about the similarity in treatment up until the 18th month for the tenure of a police officer. But move to the 19th month. And under current law, under Kurtz as it was decided, that officer, that tribal officer in his or her 19th month of service with that department has the authority to enforce state law, but none of the responsibilities that are attendant to the enforcement of state law by the deputy sheriff employed by Sheriff Wolf, who is required to have attended and been certified by that point by the Department of Police training, safety standards and training. I've been around law enforcement so long I get confused by the name, current name of the agency. So I've given you a little chart. It's the bullseye chart that's being distributed to you. It tells you the two problems that we're left with as public policymakers in relation to the authority of police officers post-Kurtz. We have the authority, but we don't have the responsibility. The bill solves both of those problems, and it solves another problem raised by Kurtz, which is we don't know what the boundaries of the authority granted by the Supreme Court in the Kurtz opinion are. We are doomed to a case-by-case determination in the absence of Senate Bill 412B, to a case-by-case determination played out in individual criminal prosecutions all across the state about whether the officer, the tribal officer who took the enforcement action, had the authority under Kurtz to do it or not. Those are the little speckled red polka dot dots in the center of the chart. Let me turn to what I think is really kind of the core public policy question, and then just briefly to a couple of the objections that have been raised. It seems to me that the result of this multi-year process, and really is a multi-year process that leads us to this day today in the discussion of Senate Bill 412B, it really boils down to, in spite of the complexity of some of the legal issues, it really boils down to pretty straightforward public policy question. And I don't mean to say by straightforward that it's an easy decision for you all to make. I recognize that there are challenge tugs and pulls in all different directions on you on this. But it seems to me the squared away public policy decision is, will you, at no additional cost to taxpayers, enhance public safety for all Oregonians by enlarging the number of well-trained, politically and legally accountable and highly professional police officers authorized to enforce state law? That's the squared away question. And in the course of these proceedings, we've dealt with, by my count now, including the objection raised for the first time this morning at about 10:45, 11 different successive objections to the passage of the bill. All of those objections, save the reciprocity issue, either are not apt criticisms of the bill or can't be resolved in the case of reciprocity because of a federal law barrier. Now, I prepared to go through all 11, but I'm not going to do that with you. I do want to turn, though, to the one that was raised first this morning, and that is the objection by the Association of Oregon Counties that is articulated in Mr. Snyder's memorandum. And I think it's important to address that because this has not been the issue that has been raised until now. And in that, and by way of reminder, what Mr. Snyder's hypothetical envisions is a situation in which a tribal police officer is sued for in either a Section 1983 civil rights claim or in a tort liability claim. And the lawsuit is for an amount of money that exceeds the current tort claim limits. And the hypothetical that Mr. Snyder poses that distinguishes the treatment of the police, the tribal officer from the treatment of the state and local officer, and thus has force in this discussion, is based on the assumption that the state's current tort claim limit is unconstitutional. Because if you don't get to that stage, then Senate Bill 412 provides exactly the same coverage on its four corners, same liability coverage on its four corners as the Oregon Tort Claims Act does. So unless you first hypothesize that the statute that you all have passed in response to the Clark decision that Mr. Snyder mentioned is unconstitutional, there's no distinction in the treatment of the two officers under those circumstances. So first you have to assume the unconstitutionality of a statute to give force to Mr. Snyder's criticism. And then you also have to assume something that I suggest never will occur. And that is, you have to assume a tribal government that is willing to say to a prospective police officer who's going to be employed by that government, if you sign on with us, we will not cover you for your tort liability beyond the extent of the tort claim coverage. If you are sued for an amount that exceeds the amount of liability that the Tort Claims Act provides, your employer will not indemnify you for that. Because unless you assume that, then what happens is the officer in court gets tagged with the $10 million judgment, and his employer, the tribe, steps up and pays it. And again, there's no distinction between the treatment of the tribal officer. So in order for Mr. Snyder's objection, the Association of Oregon Counties' objection to this bill to have force, you have to assume first the unconstitutionality of the Oregon Tort Claims Act, and then you have to assume a governmental employer that's willing to say to one of its employees, we're not going to cover you for the full extent of your potential liability. And I've already exceeded my time, and so I'll end with that. I simply would urge you to give this bill an opportunity to be worked, and really urge you a chance for everybody to make that public policy choice that I described.
Okay. Thanks, Pete.
Sure. I'll start. Thank you, Co-Chair Olson. Co-Chair Hunt. For the record, my name is Marilyn Lawrence. I manage the Standards and Certification Program for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. And I'd just like to give you a brief framework for the way Senate Bill 412 impacts the department, which I will, with your permission, reference as DPSST because it's quicker. Currently, tribal law enforcement units are not subject to DPSST jurisdiction, and so they are under no obligation to have any of their officers meet DPSST minimum standards or obtain certification, or to comply with our general requirements in Oregon statute to send all newly hired police officers to basic training within 90 days of their employment. We do have, however, a voluntary certification relationship with the tribes employing public safety officers. They may choose to send their officers to DPSST for their basic training, and many of them do so. They do select the time frame for sending their officers because they're simply under no obligation to comply with the state law concerning the 90 days or the 18-month certification requirement. Senate Bill 412B changes that relationship between DPSST and the tribal employers and officers. Under the bill, tribal law enforcement employer must comply with all DPSST requirements for employment, training, and certification for all of its officers before DPSST will certify any of them. Without certification, tribal officers do not meet the requirements to be authorized tribal police officers under the bill. Senate Bill 412B also requires our department to maintain a file of insurance documents provided by the tribes who wish to employ authorized tribal police officers. DPSST does not anticipate any fiscal impact to the bill. We provide basic police training to most tribal officers now, and the filing and document recording responsibility is minimal at best. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sir?
Yes.
I've got a question about the training and the lack of there being a fiscal on additional training. You talked about there's no requirement for them to do it, so it'd be a good idea if they did it. Then you went on to say there'd be no cost to do it because they're already doing it. I'm curious which way it is.
Co-chairs, representative, there is no fiscal because as a matter of practice, most tribes send their officers to us. They are not required to do it. There are some that don't send their officers within the 90-day requirement. They will choose to have them enter into a relationship with DPSST at a time that works within the tribal scheduling. So they are not required. We believe that most of them over a course of time do send those officers to us, so they end up coming to DPSST. So I don't believe that there would be an additional number that would be coming. It would change the schedule and the timing and whether they were required to meet maintenance training requirements and those kinds of things. But maintenance training requirements for officers is always are paid for by the employer, not by our agency.
I got this right.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to use less words than you did. So currently you believe most of the tribal police officers are already trained, are already being trained without this bill?
At some point in time, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Howie. And if we're kind of running out of time here, I'm losing people, and I still have one more bill. I got to move quickly.
I'll be very, very quick.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Olson. Co-Chair Olson, Co-Chair Hunt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Howard Arnett. I'm the tribal attorney for the Warm Springs Tribe, and I've represented the tribe for 31 years now. And for the last 20 years, I've also served as an adjunct law professor teaching Indian law subjects at Lewis and Clark and now the University of Oregon. I want to quickly, if I can, address the, what's called the reciprocity issue. And actually, I prepared a little one-page summary of the applicable federal law. This is a question that really is governed by federal law, federal Supreme Court law and federal statutory law enacted by Congress. What's characterized as a reciprocity issue is the idea that if Senate Bill 412 permits tribal officers to enforce state law against everybody outside of their reservations, that equity and reciprocity should require that state officers be allowed to enforce state law against everybody, including Indians in Indian country and on Indian reservations in Oregon. The criminal jurisdiction in Indian country on Indian reservations is a federal law issue, federal statutory law and federal common law. And the fact of the matter is, in Oregon, except for three reservations, and there are nine, the state has complete criminal jurisdiction over Indians and everybody else. Any criminal offense committed by an Indian in six of the nine reservations is subject to state court prosecution, and state officers can enforce state law on those reservations. The three exceptions are Warm Springs, Umatilla, and Burns Paiute. On those reservations, because Public Law 280, this is the federal statute enacted in 1953 by Congress, it extends state jurisdiction to Indian lands except for those three reservations in Oregon, the fallback is the underlying federal common law as articulated by the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has spoken on this issue for almost 180 years, well before Oregon became a state. The Supreme Court has said that state law, particularly state criminal laws applied to Indians, simply does not extend to Indian country and to Indian lands. Now, for that reason, at the Warm Springs Reservation, for example, situations such as one of the speakers addressed about the ability or lack of ability of state officers to affect state arrest warrants of Indians on a reservation like Warm Springs is true. But practically, it's not a problem. Years ago, long before I became the tribal attorney at Warm Springs, the tribal council, the governing body of the tribe, determined that the reservation would not be a haven for lawbreakers. And they established a procedure whereby outside agencies with valid arrest warrants to be served on Indians living on the reservation or on the reservation would simply be presented to tribal court. The tribal court judges would then tell the tribal police to go serve those warrants, pick up the offenders, and hold them in the tribal jail for up to 24 hours for the outside agency to come pick them up. That's the process that's been in place to make that difference between jurisdictions work. And as far as I know, and I've been representing the tribe for 31 years, it has not been a problem. I have not received complaints from outside agencies that process does not work. And so the idea that there should be reciprocity on those three reservations in the sense that this body, this bill, should extend state law and state jurisdiction to permit state officers to enforce state law against Indians on those three reservations out of the nine that are not subject to Public Law 280, it's a question of federal law, and it simply is beyond the authority of this legislature. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that ends the individuals who have signed up to testify. And Chief, thank you very much for listening. Is he gone?
I think so.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 412B, and I am going to open a work session on HCR 43.
Mr. Chairman, this is HCR 43. It honors Philip Lang for his dedication to public service.
Okay, I see Representative Doherty, you want to come up? Okay, I think so.
I'll be right back.
Okay, so what would you do with Representative Witt? Because he was here earlier.
What'd I do with it?
That's okay.
He did it with itself and sent me.
That's okay. Go ahead, Representative Doherty.
Okay. For the record, I'm Representative Margaret Doherty for House District 35, Greater Tigard and Southwest Portland, and a little bit of Beaverton. I'm here today to encourage you to pass the resolution honoring Phil Lang. And a lot of you, every morning we go in and we are in the Phil Lang Memorial Wing of the House. The only thing is that Phil Lang is very, very much alive and still a very, very productive part of the state of Oregon. Just a little bit of background. Speaker Lang started his career with the Air Force in 1947. From there, he went to become an Oregon State Trooper. He went and worked for the City of Portland as Chief of Staff for Mayor Terry Schrunk. And then he went through and ran for the legislature. He was in the legislature for years and years, ending his career in the legislature as Speaker of the House. And he went from there to the head of the OLCC. And since then has worked in the National Alcohol Beverage Control Association, and this June he is retiring from that after many, many years. And so you look at somebody like Phil Lang, who has given so much service to the state of Oregon, and I'm very proud to walk into that part of history of Oregon, because obviously he was a very integral part of making Oregon to have that kind of an honor. And so I encourage you to pass this to the floor, and more importantly, Phil Lang is not only a very good Oregonian, has done lots for it, but Phil Lang is also one of my constituents that I'm very, very proud of.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Judy Signet speaking on behalf of Representative Brad Witt, who is the chief co-sponsor. And I really can't say much anything because she just said it all. I personally happen to have worked for the legislature when he was the speaker, and prior to that, chair of Ways and Means. And he was a true gentleman.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions? I reckon that. Judy, thank you very much.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Okay, can you close a public hearing?
Mr. Chairman, you have a work session. We did not schedule a hearing.
Excuse me?
You may want to, because we did not have a sign-up sheet out, you might want to ask if there's anyone else who wishes to speak on the measure.
Okay. Anyone else like to speak on the measure?
And then you're in work session.
Okay, thank you. Members, just for your information, we are in a work session. Representative
Burr. Mr. Chair, I move HCR 43 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Burr moves HCR 43 to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation. Any discussion? Okay. Amy, would you call the roll, please? Excuse.
Yes.
Representative Barnhart?
Yes. Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Yep.
Representative Garrett?
Used.
Co-chair Hunt?
Aye.
Co-chair Olson?
Aye. HCR 43 passes, and you want to co-chair then between Representative Doherty and Representative Witt?
Not me.
We'll list Doherty first.
Okay.
Briefly.
Okay. You're going to close work session on HCR 43, and we are adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to meet you.
So, yep, is your new way of voting?
Yep.
Yes.